Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn. Continued. Cassette number 3, side 2. Timing is critical in this operation, Thrawn told the commando leader. But speed alone is useless if you're compromised before even entering the palace. You will be the man on the scene, Major Himron. I leave it to your judgment. The commando leader nodded. Yes, sir. Thank you, Admiral. We won't fail you. Thrawn smiled fractionally. I know you won't, Major. Dismissed. Silently, the 14 men turned and filed out of the command room. You seemed surprised, Captain, at some of my instructions, Thrawn commented as the door slid shut behind them. Yes, sir, I was, Pelion admitted. It all made sense, of course, he added hastily. I simply hadn't thought the operation out to that endpoint. All endpoints must be prepared for, Thrawn said, keying his board. The lights muted, and on the walls of the command room a sampling of holographic paintings and planics appeared. Mriss artwork, he identified it for Pelion's benefit. One of the most curious examples of omission to be found anywhere in the civilized galaxy. Until they were contacted by the 10th Alderaanian expedition, not a single one of the dozens of Mriss cultures had ever developed any form of three-dimensional artwork. Interesting, Pelion said dutifully. Some flaw in their perceptual makeup? Many of the experts still think so, Thrawn said. It seems clear to me, though, that the oversight was actually a case of cultural blind spots combined with a very subtle but equally strong social harmonization. A combination of traits we'll be able to exploit. Pelion looked at the artwork, his stomach tightening. We're attacking Mriss? It's certainly ripe for the taking, Thrawn pointed out. And a base there would give us the capability to launch attacks into the very heart of the rebellion. Except that the rebellion must know that, Pelion said carefully. If Cabal's ongoing demands for an attack on Coruscant had finally gotten to the Grand Admiral, they'd launch a massive counterattack, sir, if we so much as made a move toward Mriss. Exactly, Thrawn said, smiling with grim satisfaction. Which means that when we're finally ready to draw the Coruscant sector fleet into ambush, Mriss will be the perfect lure to use. If they come out to meet us, we'll defeat them then and there. And if they somehow sense the trap and refuse to engage, we'll have our forward base. Either way, the Empire will triumph. He reached to his board again, and the holographic artwork faded into a tactical star map. But that battle is still in the future, he said. For now, our prime goal is to build a force strong enough to ensure that ultimate victory, and to keep the rebellion off balance while we do so. Pelion nodded. The assault on Ord Mantell should go a long way toward accomplishing that. It will certainly create a degree of fear in the surrounding systems, Thrawn agreed, as well as drawing away some of the rebel pressure on our shipyard supply lines. That would be helpful, Pelion said with a scowl. The last report from Bill Bringy said the shipyards there were running critically low on Tibana gas, as well as Ephredium and Camris. I've already ordered the Bespin garrison to step up their Tibana gas production, Thrawn said, tapping his control board. As for the metals, intelligence recently reported locating a convenient stockpile. The report came up, and Pelion leaned forward to read it. He got as far as the location listing. This is intelligence's idea of a convenient stockpile? I take it you disagree? Thrawn asked mildly. Pelion looked at the report again, feeling a grimace settling in on his face. The Empire had hit Lando Calrissian's walking mining complex on the super-hot planet in Keon once before, back when they needed mole miners for Thrawn's assault on the Sleece Van shipyards. That other raid had cost the Empire over 1 million man-hours. First, in preparing the Star Destroyer Judicator for the intense heat at Inkeon's close orbit distance from its sun, and then for repairing the damage afterward. "I suppose that depends, sir," he said, "on how long we'll be losing the use of whichever Star Destroyer is detailed to the raid." "A valid question," Thrawn agreed. "Fortunately, there will be no need this time to tie up any Star Destroyers. Three of our new dreadnoughts should be more than adequate to neutralize Nkeon's security."
"But a dreadnought won't be able to..."
"Ah," Pelion interrupted himself as he suddenly understood. "It won't have to be big enough to survive in open sunlight. If they can take over one of the shield ships that fly freighters in and out of the inner system, a dreadnought would be small enough to stay behind its umbrella."
"Exactly," Thrawn nodded. "And capturing one should pose no problem. For all their impressive size, shield ships are little more than shielding, coolant systems, and a small container ship's worth of power and crew. 6 fully loaded assault shuttles should make quick work of it."
Pelion nodded, still skimming the report. "What happens if Calrissian sells his stockpiles before the assault force gets there?"
"He won't," Thrawn assured him. "The market price for metals has just begun to rise again, and men like Calrissian always wait for it to go just a little higher."
Unless Calrissian was suddenly overcome with a swell of patriotic fervor toward his friends back in the New Republic hierarchy, and decided to sell his metals at a reduced price. "I'd still recommend, sir, that the attack be carried out as soon as possible."
"Recommendation noted, Captain," Thrawn said, smiling slightly. "And, as it happens, already acted upon. The raid was launched 10 minutes ago."
Pelion smiled tightly. Someday, he decided, he'd learn not to try to second-guess the Grand Admiral.
"Yes, sir."
Thrawn leaned back in his chair.
"Return to the bridge, Captain, and prepare to make the jump to light speed. Ord Mantell is waiting."
Chapter 7. The beeping from his board prodded Luke out of his light doze. Blinking away the sleep, he gave the displays a quick scan. "R2, he called, stretching as best he could in the tight confines of the cockpit. "We're just about there. Get ready." A nervous-sounding warble came in acknowledgement.
"Come on, R2, relax," Luke urged the droid, settling his fingertips around the X-Wing's hyperspace lever and letting the Force flow through him.
"Almost time. Now." He pulled the lever back, and the star lines appeared and collapsed back into stars. And there, directly ahead, was the Nogri homeworld of Honor. R2 gave a soft whistle.
"I know," Luke agreed, feeling a little sick himself.
Leia had told him what to expect. But even with that warning, the sight of the world lying in the X-Wing's path was a shock. Beneath the sparse white clouds floating over the surface, the entire planetary landmass was a flat, uniform brown. Comb grass, Leia had called it. The local Honoran plants the Empire had genetically modified to perpetuate their systematic destruction of the planet's ecology. That deceit, combined with first Vader's and later Thrawn's carefully limited aid, had bought the Empire 4 decades of Nogri service. Even now, squads of Nogri death commandos were scattered around the galaxy, fighting and dying for those whose cold-blooded treachery and counterfeit compassion had turned them into slaves.
R2 warbled something, and Luke broke his gaze away from the silent monument to Imperial ruthlessness.
I don't know, he admitted, as the droid's question scrolled across his computer display. We'd have to get a team of environment and ecology specialists out here before we could tell. Doesn't look very hopeful, though, does it?
The droid chirped, an electronic shrug that turned suddenly into a startled shrill.
Luke's head jerked up, just as a small, fast-attack patrol ship shot past overhead.
I think they've spotted us, he commented as casually as possible. Let's hope it's the Nogri, and not an
Starfighter, identify yourself. A deep, cat-like voice mewed from the comm.
Luke keyed for transmission, reaching out with the force toward the patrol ship that was now curving back into attack position. Even at this range, he should have been able to sense a human pilot, which meant that it was indeed a Nogri out there. At least, he hoped so.
This is Luke Skywalker, he said, son of the Lord Darth Vader, brother of Leia Organa Solo.
For a long moment, the comm was silent. Why have you come?
Normal prudence, Luke knew, would have suggested that he not bring up the matter of his power cells until he had a better idea of how matters stood politically with the Nogri leaders. But Leia had mentioned several times how impressed she'd been by the Nogri sense of honor and straightforward honesty.
My ship's primary power cells have been damaged, he told the other. I thought you might be able to help me.
There was a soft hiss from the comm. You place us in great danger, son of Vader, the Nogri said. Imperial ships come to honor at random times. If you are sighted, all will suffer.
I understand, Luke said, a small weight lifting from him.
If the Nogri were worried about him being spotted by Imperials, at least they hadn't completely rejected Leia's invitation to rebel against the Empire.
If you'd prefer, I'll leave.
He held his breath as behind him R2 moaned softly.
If the Nogri took him up on his offer, it was questionable as to whether they'd be able to get anywhere else on the power they had left.
Apparently, the Nogri pilot was thinking along the same lines. The Lady Vader has already risked much on behalf of the Nogri, he said. We cannot permit you to endanger your life. Follow me, son of Vader. I will bring you to what safety the Nogri can offer.
According to Leia, there was only a single small area on Honor that had been made capable of supporting any plant life other than the Empire's bioengineered comb grass. Kabarak and the Matrok of the clan Kimbar had kept her, Chewbacca, and 3PO in one of the villages there, managing with skill and more than a little luck to hide her from prying Imperial eyes. Leia had included the location of the clean land along with the coordinates of the system itself. And as Luke followed the patrol ship down toward the surface of the planet, it quickly became apparent that they weren't going there.
Where are we headed? He asked the Nogri pilot as they dipped beneath a layer of clouds.
To the future of our world, the alien said.
Ah, Luke murmured under his breath.
A double line of jagged cliffs could be seen ahead, looking a little like stylized dorsal ridges from a pair of Tatooine crate dragons.
Is your future in those mountains? He suggested.
There was another soft hiss from the comm. As the Lady Vader and the Lord Vader before her, the Nogri said, you also read the souls of the Nogri.
Luke shrugged. It hadn't been more than a lucky guess, actually.
Where do we go?
Others will show you, the pilot said. For here I must leave you. Farewell, son of Vader. My family will long cherish the honor of this day.
The patrol ship cut sharply upward, heading back toward space. And in perfect synchronization, two combat-equipped cloud cars rose from seemingly nowhere to settle into flanking positions. "We greet you, son of Vader," a new voice said from the comm. "We are honored to guide you. Follow." One of the cloud cars moved ahead to take the point, the other dropping back to rear guard position. Luke stayed with the formation, trying to see just where they might be headed. As far as he could tell, the cliffs were as barren as the rest of the planet. R2 chirped, and a message scrolled across Luke's display. "A river?" Luke asked, peering out his canopy. "Where? Oh, there it is. Emptying out from between the two cliff lines, right?" The droid beeped an affirmative. It looked to be a pretty fast-moving river, too, Luke decided, as they flew closer, and he could see the numerous lines of white water, indicating submerged rocks. Probably explained why the gorge between the two cliff lines was so sharp and deep. They reached the end of the cliff lines a few minutes later. The lead cloud car turned to portside, lifting smoothly over a set of foothills and disappearing around the side of one of the higher crags. Luke followed, smiling tightly as an old memory came to mind. "You're required to maneuver straight down this trench." Guiding the X-Wing around the foothills, he flew into the shadow of the cliffs themselves. And into an entirely different world. Along the narrow banks of the river, the ground was a solid mass of brilliant green. R2 whistled in startled amazement. "They're plants," Luke said, realizing only after the words were out of his mouth how ridiculous they sounded. Of course they were plants, but to find plants on Honor... "It is the future of our world," one of his escort said, and there was no mistaking the grim pride in his voice. "The future which the Lady Vader gave us. Continue to follow, son of Vader. The landing area is still ahead." The landing area turned out to be a large, flat-topped boulder jutting partway into the swift-moving river about 2 kilometers along the gorge. With a cautious eye on the racing water beneath him, Luke eased the X-Wing down. Fortunately, it was larger than it had looked from 50 meters up. The cloud cars waited until he had touched down, then swung around and headed back down the gorge. Shutting the X-Wing's systems back to standby, Luke looked around. The greenery he saw now was not as monochromatic as he'd first thought. There were at least 4 slightly different shades represented, intermingled in a pattern that was too consistent to be accidental. A pipe could be seen angling down into the river at one point, its other end disappearing up into the plant growth. Utilizing the pressure of the current, he decided to bring water up over the bank for irrigation. A few meters downstream from the boulder, hidden from view by a rock overhang, he could see a small, hut-like building. 2 Nogri stood just outside its door, one with steely gray skin, the other a much darker gray. Even as he watched, they started toward him. "Looks like the reception committee," Luke commented to R2, hitting the switch to pop his canopy. "You stay put here, and I mean stay put. You fall in the water like you did that first trip to Dagobah, and you'll be lucky if we can even find all the pieces." There was no need to give the order twice. R2 warbled a nervous acknowledgement, then an equally nervous question. "Yes, I'm sure they're friendly," Luke assured him, pulling off his flight helmet and getting to his feet. "Don't worry, I won't be going far." Vaulting over the X-Wing's side, he headed toward his hosts. The 2 Nogri were already at the edge of the landing boulder, standing silently watching him. Luke grimaced to himself as he walked toward them, stretching out with the Force, and wishing he were skilled enough to get some reading, any reading, on this species.
"In the name of the New Republic, I bring you greetings," he said, when he was close enough to be heard over the roar of the river. "I'm Luke Skywalker, son of the Lord Darth Vader, brother of Leia Organa Solo." He held out his left hand, palm upward, as Leia had instructed him to do. The older Nogri stepped forward and touched his snout to Luke's palm. The nostrils flattened themselves against his skin, and Luke had to fight to keep from twitching away from the tickling sensation. "I greet you, son of Vader," the alien said, releasing Luke's hand. In unison, both Nogri dropped to their knees, hands splaying out to the sides in the deference gesture Leia had described. "I am Okevam Clan Bachtor. I serve the Nogri people here at the future of our world. You honor us with your presence." "I am honored by your hospitality," Luke said, as both aliens rose again to their feet. "And your companion is?"
"I am Kabarak Clan Kimbar," the younger Nogri said. "The clan of Vader has now doubly honored me."
"Kabarak Clan Kimbar," Luke repeated, eyeing the young alien with new appreciation. So this was the young Nogri commando who had risked everything, first in bringing Leia to his people, then in protecting her from Grand Admiral Thrawn. "For your service to my sister Leia, I thank you. My family and I are in your debt."
"The debt is not yours, son of Vader," Ovkevam said. "The debt rather belongs to the Nogri people. The actions of Kabarak Clan Kimbar were only the first line of repayment."
Luke nodded, not really sure of what to say to that. "You called this place the future of your world?" he asked, hoping to change the subject.
"It is the future given to the Nogri people by the Lady Vader," Okevan said, waving his hands in a circular gesture that took in the entire valley. "Here, with her gift, we cleanse the land of the Empire's poisoned plants. Here will someday be enough food to provide for all."
"It's impressive," Luke said, and meant it. Out in the open, all that greenery would have stood out against the background comb grass like a bantha at a Jawa family gathering. But here, with the twin cliff lines blocking the view from everywhere except more or less straight up, there was a good chance incoming Imperial ships would never even suspect its existence. The river supplied ample water. The lower latitude implied a slightly longer growing season than that at the clean land itself. And if worse came to worst, a number of properly placed explosives could dam the river or bring down part of the cliffs themselves, burying the evidence of their quiet rebellion against the Empire. And the Nogri had had barely a month to plan, design, and build it all. No wonder Thrawn and Vader before him had found the Nogri to be such useful servants.
"It was the Lady Vader who made it possible," Ovkevam said. "We have little to offer in the way of hospitality, son of Vader, but what we have is yours."
"Thank you," Luke nodded. "But as your patrol ship pilot pointed out, my presence on Honor is a danger to you. If you can provide my ship with replacement power cells, I'll be on my way as quickly as I can."
"I would pay, of course." "We could accept no payment from the son of Vader," Okebon said, looking shocked at the very idea. "It would be merely a single line of the debt owed by the Nogri people."
"I understand," Luke said, stifling a sigh. They meant well, certainly, but all this guilt about their service to the Empire was going to have to stop. Races and beings far more sophisticated than they were had been equally taken in by the Emperor's deceits. "I suppose the first step is to find out whether you have spares that'll fit my ship. How do we go about doing that?"
"It is already done," Kabarak said. "The cloud cars will carry word of your need to the spaceport at Nsnau. The power cells and technicians to install them will be here by nightfall.
Meanwhile, we offer you our hospitality, Ofkevam added, throwing a sideways look at Kabarak. Perhaps feeling the younger Nogri should let his elder do the talking.
I'd be honored, Luke said. Lead the way.
The hut under the cliff overhang was as small as it had looked from the landing boulder. Most of the available space was taken up by two narrow cots, a low table, and what appeared to be the food storage preparation module from a small spaceship. But at least it was quieter than outside.
This will be your home while you are on honor, Ofkevam told him. Kabarak and I will stand guard outside to protect you with our lives.
That won't be necessary, Luke assured them, looking around the room. Clearly it had been set up for long-term occupancy. What do you two do here, if I may ask?
I am caretaker to this place, Ofkevam said. I walk the land to see that the plants are growing properly. Kabarak Clan Kimbar.
He looked at the younger alien, and Luke got the distinct impression of a grim humor in the glance.
Kabarak Clan Kimbar is a fugitive from the Nogri people. Even now we have many ships searching for him.
Of course, Luke said dryly. With Grand Admiral Thrawn threatening to subject Kabarak to a complete Imperial interrogation, it had been vital that the young commando escape from custody and drop out of sight. It was equally vital that knowledge of the Empire's betrayal be passed on to the Nogri commando teams scattered around the galaxy. The two objectives dovetailed rather nicely.
Do you require food? Ofkevam asked. Or rest?
I'm fine, thank you, Luke said. I think the best thing would probably be for me to go back to my ship and start pulling those power cells out.
May I assist? Kabarak asked.
I'd appreciate that, yes, Luke said. He didn't need any help, but the sooner the Nogri worked out this supposed debt of theirs, the better. Come on, toolkits in the ship.
There is further word from N'Stau, Kabarak said, moving invisibly through the darkness to where Luke sat with his back against the X-Wing's landing skid. The captain of the Imperial ship has decided to complete minor repairs here. He expects the work to take 2 days.
He hesitated.
To you, son of Vader, the Dynasts express their apologies.
No apology necessary, Luke assured him. Looking up past the shadow of the starfighter's wing at the thin band of stars shining down amid the otherwise total blackness. So that was that. He was stuck here for 2 more days.
I knew when I came here that this might happen. I'm just sorry I have to impose further on you.
Your presence is not an imposition.
I appreciate the hospitality.
Luke nodded toward the stars overhead. I take it there's still no indication they might have spotted my ship.
Would the son of Vader not know if that happened? Kabarak countered.
Luke smiled in the darkness. Even Jedi have limitations, Kabarak. Distant danger is very hard to detect. And yet, he reminded himself silently, the Force was obviously still with him. That strike cruiser up there could easily have turned up at a far more awkward time. Say, while the Nogri tech team had been in transit to or from the valley, or even while Luke himself was heading out to space. An alert captain could have picked up on either and brought the whole thing crashing down right there. There was a whisper of movement, felt rather than heard over the sound of the river, as Kabarak sat down beside him.
It is not enough, is it? The Nogri asked quietly. This place. The Dynasts call it our future, but it is not.
Luke shook his head. No, he had to admit. You've done a tremendous job with this place, and it'll certainly help you feed your people. But the future of honor itself, I'm not an expert, Kabarak. But from what I've seen here, I don't think honor can be saved.
The Nogri hissed between his needle teeth, the sound barely audible over the racing water below.
You speak the thought of many of the Nogri people, he said. Perhaps none really believe otherwise.
We can help you find a new home, Luke promised. There are many worlds in the galaxy. We'll find you a place where you can begin again.
Kabarak hissed again. But it will not be honor.
Luke swallowed hard. No. For a minute, neither spoke. Luke listened to the sounds of the river, his heart aching with sympathy for the Nogri. But what had been done to honor was far beyond his power to change. The Jedi indeed had their limitations. There was another ripple of air as Kabarak climbed back to his feet.
Are you hungry? He asked Luke. If so, I can bring food.
Yes, thank you, Luke said. The Nogri left. Stifling a sigh, Luke shifted position against the landing skid. It was bad enough knowing there was a problem he was helpless to solve. To have to sit here for 2 days with the whole thing staring him accusingly in the face only made it worse. He looked up at the thin trail of stars, wondering what Leia had thought of the whole situation. Had she too realized that honor was too far gone to save? Or could she have had some idea of how to bring it back? Or had she been too busy with the immediate concerns of survival to even think that far ahead? He grimaced as another small pang of guilt tugged at him. Somewhere out there on Coruscant, his sister was about to give birth to her twins. Might have already done so for all he knew. Han was with her, of course, but he'd wanted to be there too. But if he couldn't be there in person. Taking a deep breath, he allowed his body to relax. Once before on Dagobah, he'd been able to reach out to the future, to see his friends and the path they were on. Then he'd had Yoda to guide him. But if he could find the proper pattern on his own, he might be able to catch a glimpse of his niece and nephew. Carefully keeping his thoughts and will focused, he stretched out through the Force. Leia was crouching in the darkness, her blaster and lightsaber in her hands, her heart racing with fear and determination. Behind her was Winter, holding tightly to two small lives, helpless and fragile. A voice, hands, filled with anger and the same determination. Chewbacca was somewhere nearby, somewhere overhead, he thought, and Lando was with him. Before them were shadowy figures, their minds filled with menace and a cold and deadly purpose. A blaster fired, and another. A door burst open. Leia, Luke blurted, his body jerking violently as the trance broke like a bubble, one final image flickering and vanishing into the honor night. A faceless person, moving toward his sister and her children from behind the shadowy evil. A person edged with the power of the Force.
What is it?
A Nogri voice snapped beside him. Luke opened his eyes to find Kabarak and Okevam crouching in front of him, a small glow rod bathing their nightmare faces in dim light. I saw Leia, he told them, hearing the trembling of reaction in his voice. She and her children were in danger. He took a shuddering breath, purging the adrenaline from his body. I have to get back to Coruscant. Okevam and Kabarak exchanged glances.
But if the danger is now, Okevam said.
It wasn't now. Luke shook his head. It was the future. I don't know how far ahead. Kabarak touched Ovkevam's shoulder, and for a minute the Nogri conversed quietly in their own language.
All right, Luke told himself, running through the Jedi calming techniques. All right. Lando had been in the vision. He distinctly remembered seeing Lando there. But Lando, as far as he knew, was still out at his Nomad City mining operation on Inkeon, which meant Luke still had time to get back to Coruscant before the attack on Leia could happen. Or did it? Was the vision a true image of the future? Or could a change in events alter what he'd seen? Difficult to see, Master Yoda had said of Luke's vision on Dagobah. Always in motion is the future. And if someone of Yoda's depth of knowledge in the Force had been unable to sift through the uncertainties...
If you wish it, son of Vader, the commandos will seize the Imperial ship,
Okevam said.
If its people were destroyed quickly, there would be no word from it that would point blame at the Nogri.
I can't let you do that. Luke shook his head. It's too dangerous. There's no way to guarantee they wouldn't get a message off.
Okevam drew himself up. If the Lady Vader is in danger, the Nogri people are willing to take that risk.
Luke looked up at them, an odd sensation rippling through him. Those nightmare Nogri faces hadn't changed, but in the space of a heartbeat, Luke's perception of them had. No longer were they just another abstract set of alien features. Suddenly, they had become the faces of friends. The last time I had a vision like this, I rushed off without thinking to try and help, he told them quietly. Not only didn't I help them any, but I also nearly cost them their own chance at escape. He looked down at his artificial right hand, feeling again the ghostly memory of Vader's lightsaber slicing through his wrist. And lost other things, too. He looked back up at them. I won't make that same mistake again. Not with the lives of the Nogri people at stake. I'll wait until the Imperial ship is gone. Kabarak reached out to gently touch his shoulder.
Do not be concerned for their safety, son of Vader, he said. The Lady Vader will not easily be defeated. Not with the Wookiee Chewbacca at her side.
Luke looked up at the stars overhead. No, with Han and Chewie and the whole of palace security beside her, Leia should be able to handle any normal intruders. But there was that final unformed image, the person who he'd sensed drawing on the Force. On Jomark, the Jedi Master Kabauth had made it abundantly clear that he wanted Leia and her children. Could he want them badly enough to personally go to Coruscant for them?
They will prevail, Kabarak repeated.
With an effort, Luke nodded. I know, he said, trying to sound like he meant it. There was no sense in all of them worrying. The last of the fires were out, the last of the microfractures sealed, the last of the injured taken to sickbay. And with an odd mixture of resignation and cold-blooded fury, Lando Calrissian gazed out his private command room window and knew that it was over. Cloud City on Bespin, and now Nomad City on Inkeon. For the second time, the Empire had taken something he'd worked to create, had worked and sweated and connived to build, and had turned it into ashes. From his desk console came a beep. Stepping over to it, he leaned down and touched the comm switch. Calrissian, he said, wiping his other hand across his forehead. Sir, this is Baggett in Engine Central, a tired voice came. The last drive motivator just went. Lando grimaced, but after all the damage those TIE fighters had inflicted on his walking mining operation, it didn't exactly come as a surprise. Any chance of fixing enough of them to get us moving again? He asked.
Not without a frigate's worth of spare parts, Baggett said. Sorry, sir, but there are just too many things, broken or fused.
Understood.
In that case, you'd better have your people concentrate on keeping life support going.
Yes, sir.
Sir, there's a rumor going around that we've lost all long-range communications.
It's only temporary, Lando assured him. We've got people working on it right now, and enough spare parts to build 2 new transmitters.
Yes, sir, Baggett said, sounding a shade less discouraged. Well, I guess I'll get over to life support.
Keep me informed, Lando told him.
Switching off the comm, he walked back to the window. 20 days they had. Just 20 days before Nkion's slow rotation took them from the center of the night side across into full sunlight. At which point it wouldn't much matter whether or not the drive motivators, communication gear, or even life support were working. When the sun began its slow crawl up the horizon over there, everyone still left in Nomad City would be on their way to a very fast and very warm death. 20 days. Lando gazed out the viewport at the night sky, letting his eyes flick across the constellation patterns he'd dreamed up in his occasional idle moments. If they could get the long-range transmitter fixed in the next day or so, they should be able to call Coruscant for help. No matter what the Imperial attack force might have done to the shield ships at the Outer System Depot, the New Republic's spaceship techs ought to be able to get one of them flying again, at least well enough for one last trip into the inner system. It would be tight, but with any luck at all... Abruptly, his train of thought broke off. There, just shy of directly overhead, the brilliant star of an approaching shield ship had appeared. Reflexively, he took a step toward his desk to sound battle stations. If that was the Imperials again, come to finish the job... He stopped. No. If it was the Imperials, then that was that. He had no more fighters left to send against them, and no defenses remaining on Nomad City itself. There was no point in stirring up the rest of his people for nothing. And then, from the desk, came the screeching static of a comm override signal. Nomad City, this is General Bel Iblis, a well-remembered voice boomed out. Can anyone hear me? Lando dived for the desk.
This is Lando Calrissian, General, he said, striving for as much nonchalance as he could muster.
This book is continued on cassette number 4, side 1.